And then after the wildfires in Maui, that 1 in 6 survivors were forced to trade sexual favors for just basic supplies.
Wait, what? You sure you got that right, Christy Nolan?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Cause it doesn't sound right.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, the beating heart of resistance to Donald Trump's attempted authoritarian takeover of these United States, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. And guess what?
What?
I found something that the Trump administration did not screw up.
What?
I think. Now, don't hold me to this, and don't get me wrong. They did try to screw it up. They did try to do the evil that they usually do, Desi Doyen. But for whatever reason, if I'm understanding the story correctly, they ended up doing the right thing anyway.
Are they okay?
Despite themselves. So far, anyway, I'm sure it's an accident, but I will take it. So such things are such rarities at this point, the Trump administration doing good for the American people instead of doing evil, accidentally or otherwise here, I'm just going to drop it right on right here is our top story for the moment before everything gets too dark again today. The Trump administration has withdrawn its plan to rewrite a ban on the last type of asbestos still used in the United States. The Trump administration's Environmental Protection Agency said in a court filing on Monday that it will now defend the Biden administration's ban on chrysotile asbestos. It will defend something that the Biden administration did and was defending in court? Really? What? Asbestos is carcinogenic and has been mostly phased out in the U.S., but last year the agency, the EPA, under former President Joe Biden, sought to finish the decades-long fight with a comprehensive ban on chrysotile asbestos. The EPA in 2024 said, quote, exposure to asbestos is known to cause lung cancer, mesothelioma, ovarian cancer. It's linked to more than 40,000 deaths in the U.S. each year. Now, the Biden-era ban was a victory at the time for health advocates who had long fought to prohibit the carcinogenic mineral in all of its forms. But last month, the Trump administration said it planned to reconsider the asbestos ban, which would have delayed its implementation by several years. It had actually announced that it planned to review the Biden rule and that the reconsideration would likely take 30 months. So 2.5 years.
Why would anybody do that, I guess, is another question.
After 2.5 years plus the long public comment period, et cetera, that would essentially delay the rule for pretty much the entirety of the Trump administration. Yes, on behalf of the chemical industry lobby, which has long opposed this ban. But late Monday, for some reason, the Trump EPA withdrew that court filing. Quote, the agency has further reconsidered, the EPA said in the filing in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. That's the most far-right appeals court in the nation, where the suit was filed by industry opponents of the restrictions for exactly that reason, saying that the EPA would no longer rework the asbestos ban. So, yeah, are you okay, Trump EPA? Does your boss know that you are doing the right thing by helping to keep people alive rather than kill them? even though industry moguls want you to do otherwise? Are you okay? Cristal asbestos, known as white asbestos, is banned in more than 50 countries for its link to lung cancer and mesothelioma, a cancer that forms in the linings of internal organs. White asbestos, however, has been imported for use in the United States for things like roofing materials, textiles, cement. It is also used in gaskets, clutches, brake pads, and other automotive parts, as well as in chlorine manufacturing. The EPA, under President Biden, adopted a ban in 2024 on the use, manufacture, and import of Cristal asbestos. It was the first legal constraint on the deadly substance since 2016, when Congress, under then-President Obama, updated and strengthened the Toxic Substance Control Act by requiring testing and regulation of thousands of chemicals used in everyday products. When the administration said last month that it would review the asbestos ban, well, that drew a lot of criticism from Democrats and health advocates, but the Trump administration is now agreeing with them? In a Facebook post, Hillary Clinton, of all people, the former Democratic Secretary of State, Donald Trump's opponent in the 2016 presidential election, she wrote, quote, "What is this? Make asbestos great again?" This was after their announcement last month. You'd think that alone would require the Trump administration to dig in his heels to unban asbestos. But apparently it didn't. The Trump administration had said, among other things, that it intended to consider whether the ban, quote, went beyond what is necessary to eliminate the unreasonable risk for workers using asbestos in chemical production. In a statement, the EPA said it still disagreed with aspects of the Biden-era policy, but had considered the time that a new rulemaking process would require. The EPA will now instead, quote, take immediate action to further strengthen protections for workers, it said in a statement. Now, whether we should believe them or not, that's another matter. But these are, you know, statements and filings made in a court of law where they had previously changed their position from the one the Biden administration had taken in this case. And now they're changing their position again, reversing their opposition to the restriction. So the court filings should have some meaning in, you know, helping to ensure that they actually are reversing their previously reversed position here. To remedy the, quote, to remedy the previous administration's approach, we notified the court that we intend to reconsider the applicability of interim workplace protection requirements during the replacement of asbestos gaskets for all workers, said the EPA press secretary Brigitte Hirsch in a statement. So to save face, I guess, perhaps after public outcry when they were found, allowing asbestos, they're now saying, well, the Biden administration was still wrong because their ban didn't protect workers enough. Okay, so perhaps I should take this opportunity then to note that the Biden administration also did not nearly do enough to protect American workers from the deadly effects of climate change. So maybe the Trump administration can step in here and correct that egregious oversight by Biden and, you know, do something about it and really teach that Biden administration a lesson by really, you know, taking measures to protect Americans from climate change. That would show Joe Biden.
Yeah, to rectify what Biden didn't do good enough.
I mean, if that's what it takes to make them do the right thing.
Go for it.
Yeah, please. I'll take it. The Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization, an advocacy group working to prevent asbestos exposure, welcomed the new reversal, with the group's president stating that the federal government's original move to reconsider the ban, quote, would have opened the door to years of delay, confusion, et cetera, increased risk to public health. Linda Reinstein, the group's president, said she was elated the EPA is not going to reconsider the Biden ban. She speculated that the EPA did not like public reaction to its position. But she said the EPA's new statement doesn't completely make sense in that they should be talking about a ban, not about workplace protection. So we'll see. You'll forgive me for remaining skeptical about all of this for the moment, but I guess that's my job. So now, even the Trump administration appears to be against the deadly use of asbestos. So that's something, I guess.
That is. That counts.
Though please note, the ban, by the way, still allows some manufacturers up to 12 years to phase out the use of asbestos. This is a provision that followed lobbying efforts by trade groups like the American Chemistry Council. And even with that 12-year phase out that they won, they're still part of that lawsuit that is ongoing anyway to challenge the restrictions in court, even though the Trump DOJ apparently and EPA is no longer supporting it. The American Chemistry Council did not immediately respond to requests for comment either from the New York Times or the Associated Press. Perhaps as they review their payoff system to politicians to try and figure out where they must have gone wrong here, I guess. We'll see. Still skeptical, as noted, but maybe, just maybe, the Trump administration has done something not horrible for a very rare change. So, yes, that makes the top of today's broadcast with that stunning news. As to my related climate change comments there, never fear, the Trump EPA and the rest of the Trump administration is still doing all of the wrong things there, so never fear. More on that in Desi's Green News Report a little bit later this hour, following a third deadly climate change-fueled flash flooding event in a third state in less than a week. And with thousands now dead across Western Europe amid another climate change-fueled extreme heat wave. So Des will be here with that good news, yeah, as always. A little bit later, we have been discussing of late some pretty dark turns that we've seen from this administration that I've described as fascist authoritarianism, because that's the most accurate way to describe what they are doing. And what we now face in the United States under Donald Trump. But let's not lose sight of the fact that he is still a clownish, incompetent buffoon who has no real clue what he's actually doing. And I think that's important to remember and to take note of from time to time. Yes, he is dangerous. Yes, his incompetence is dangerous. But being frightened by him does not help. That may help him, but not us. Not those of us who find ourselves standing up against him. Standing up for truth and justice and facts in opposition to his authoritarianism, which is a sign of weakness, by the way, not strength. He's got to, you know, ban data on climate change at the federal government, not because his position on behalf of the fossil fuel industry is so fantastic and strong, but because it is so weak. He's got to hide the evidence that counters his nonsense because he can't, you know, take it on in a real open debate. So while this authoritarianism is dangerous and can be frightening, it's also easier to take on the autocrat when you remember that, especially in this case, he is a fool. The king may be marching down the street, but he got no clothes on. And we can all see that. And he thinks he does have clothes on, but he don't. And we can all see it, at least those of us who have not been brain poisoned by him and his, you know, fellow fascistic supporters. And it's good to continue to remind ourselves of that from time to time. He's an incompetent, bumbling fool. He's a clown who has no idea what he is doing. And that became embarrassingly clear yet again on Wednesday during a meeting with African leaders at the White House. Donald Trump was basking in the praise of a group of African leaders on Wednesday, as Reuters reported last night, many of them speaking a different language, when the Liberian president, Joseph Boakai, took to his microphone and clearly having been smartly prepped before his meeting with Trump, so he knew to, you know, kiss up to Donald Trump, as he said in English, quote, "Liberia is a longtime friend of the United States, and we believe in your policy of making America great again." See, he was well prepped.
Yeah.
He knew what to say. Unlike our president, as Boakai was there to advocate for U.S. investment in Liberia, saying, quote, "We just want to thank you so much for this opportunity." And then he continued,
"We want to encourage American involvement in the investment in Liberia.
Yeah.
We'd like to see that happen. We want to work with the United States in peace and security within the region, because we are committed to that. And we just want to thank you so much for this opportunity."
Well, thank you. It's such good English, such beautiful. Where did you learn to speak so beautifully? Where were you educated? Where?
Yes,
in Liberia?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's very interesting. It's beautiful English.
Sure.
I have people at this table can't speak nearly as well.
Very good, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Now, obviously, Trump was very impressed with Boakai's English skills, as you heard there. And, of course, he should be, because, obviously, either nobody bothered to prep Trump for the meeting with the president of Liberia, or they tried, and Trump, you know, being the buffoon that he is, did not want to be prepped. He can handle this all by himself. In any case, Liberia was founded in 1822 as a colony for free black Americans. It was the brainchild of white Americans trying to address what they saw as a problem, basically the future for black people in the United States after slavery ended. So English is Liberia's official language. He didn't have to go learn it somewhere and speak it beautifully. It's the actual language of the actual country. So, yes, the president of that country, as it turns out, speaks the language beautifully, don't you think? Apparently, nobody bothered to tell Donald Trump that in advance, or he didn't bother to learn it for himself, because he is an unspeakably embarrassing clown who should not be anywhere near the White House, much less running it, much less having important, you know, foreign policy meetings with foreign leaders. But, you know, if you know what a clown the guy is, taking him on is, frankly, much less frightening. His cabinet, of course, is stocked with a similar bunch of bumbling fools, including his secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem. She was fun on Wednesday also, despite the fact that she was commenting on the horrors following more than 100 dead, including dozens of children, after last Friday's preventable flash flood tragedy in the Guadalupe River in Texas, as she was trying to defend the administration's plans now to do away entirely with FEMA. And she did so by using, in fact, misusing just a horrible statistic in order to do so. As reported by Politico on Wednesday night, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem on Wednesday suggested the Federal Emergency Management Agency's response to the 2023 Lahaina wildfires on Maui, Hawaii, was so poor that one in six survivors of those deadly fires had to trade sexual favors in exchange for basic supplies. Well, that sounds pretty bad. One in six survivors were forced to trade sexual favors just to survive after the fires that killed 114 people 2 years ago next month. Now, we've got a lot of listeners on Maui, which airs the broadcast on 88.5 FM, KAKU. So please feel free to write in to me via bradcast at bradblog.com if there's something that I'm missing here. But as Politico notes, Kristi Noem's statistic, hoping, you know, to support her argument that FEMA is just a terrible agency, it deserves to be abolished altogether, who needs it? They're a total failure. They don't do anything. They can't help anybody. They didn't help anybody at all in on Maui after the fires, as she and the administration have vowed to shut it down. She was arguing that one in six survivors of those fires, which directly affected some 17,000 people and destroyed more than 2,000 homes and multifamily structures, one in six had to trade sexual favors just to survive in the aftermath because the FEMA response was so poor. Well, that was apparently, as it turns out, a reference to a report that one of the authors of the report describes as, quote, gross manipulation of their work.
So Noam mangled the results of that report.
Here's what she said at a FEMA review meeting on Wednesday.
And then after the wildfires in Maui, residents voiced concerns that every FEMA employee that they spoke with had different answers. None of them had conversations that resulted in getting assistance that was helpful or any clarity in their situations. The situation in Lahaina was so bad that one in six survivors were forced to trade sexual favors, other favors for just basic supplies.
So none of the survivors had conversations with anyone at FEMA that resulted in them getting assistance. And one in six survivors were forced to trade sexual favors. Now, in response to Politico's questions about where the hell that statistic came from, one in six survivors, well, DHS sent a DHS press release from May containing a link to this report. The DHS press release dated May 29 this year is headlined, DHS condemns Biden administration failures in the wake of Lahaina, Hawaii fires. Subtitled, report reveals one in six survivors forced to engage in sexual acts in exchange for basic necessities. Goes on to read a new report about the aftermath of the August 23 Lahaina, Hawaii fires, reveals FEMA's horrific neglect and mismanagement under the Biden administration. According to the report issued by Filipino-Hawaiian advocacy group Tagnawa, conditions for survivors in the aftermath of the fire were both appalling and inhumane. One in six survivors were forced to engage in sexual acts in exchange for basic necessities like food and housing. Quote, that is un-American, said DHS Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin. While American citizens from Hawaii to North Carolina suffered, Biden and Mayorkas, who headed up his DHS, used FEMA as a piggy bank, spending hundreds of millions of American taxpayer dollars to housing illegal aliens, including at the Roosevelt Hotel that served as a Tren de Aragua base of operations and was used to shelter Laken Riley's killer. So it looks like Trish was using all of the keywords there.
It's like a Mad Libs of MAGA idiocy. That
has nothing to North Carolina, where Donald Trump pretended that Joe Biden's FEMA had refused to help flood victims after Hurricane Helene because they were Republican voters. Tren de Aragua, that's a reference to the Venezuelan gang that the Trump administration has decided was a grave danger to Americans during last year's campaign, claiming Biden, I guess, was working with them at a base of operations that Tren de Aragua has, mentioning Laken Riley, the 22-year-old nursing student from Georgia who was killed in February last year by an undocumented migrant from Venezuela. Somehow all of that made its way into this DHS press release on FEMA's response to the Maui fires almost 2 years after they actually happened. The press release ends by stating, quote, this is yet another outrageous example of the gross mismanagement and poor treatment of Americans under the prior administration. This will never happen again under the leadership of President Trump and Secretary Noam, press release said. Well, we'll see about that. But as to the point that one in six survivors of the fires had to trade sexual favors to survive, Politico took the time to look into that and reports that the study conducted by Tagnawa a group which describes itself as a, quote, Filipino feminist disaster response organization based in Hawaii, had surveyed 70 female Filipino fire survivors and found that 16% of those surveyed, roughly one in six, engaged in, quote, survival sex in exchange for basic necessities post-disaster.
16% means 11 people.
Even 11 people, that's bad.
Yes.
But it is very specific. It does not necessarily speak to FEMA's response. It certainly doesn't apply to the 17,000 survivors of that fire. And no, one out of six of them did not have to perform sexual favors to survive after the fire. The study found that some of the Filipino women had, quote, survival sex with a landlord, an employer, a family friend, and acquaintances, or at least 11 of them in this study.
So Noam either lied or has difficulty with reading comprehension.
Well, Cara Jabola Karolis, one of the authors of the report, told Politico that the administration's reading of the data was, quote, a misinterpretation. She noted, quote, I'm more concerned about just the gross manipulation of using that statistic to do the opposite of what the report is calling for, she said, like funding FEMA to improve their response for women's needs, as opposed to using the study to support abolishing FEMA altogether, as Noam did on Wednesday. And in their press release from May, when DHS used that report to argue that it revealed, quote, FEMA's horrific neglect and mismanagement under the Biden administration.
Yeah, so it sounds like the Trump administration is just trying to lay the groundwork to claim that FEMA must be abolished.
On Wednesday, Noam said, quote, we're up against decades of gross mismanagement and negligence.
Yep.
The list of FEMA's failures is staggering, she said. FEMA has been disastrous at times, incompetent at times, and not just in the last few years, but for decades. Well, there have been horrific failures of FEMA over the years. Its response, you may recall, under George W. Bush to Hurricane Katrina, of course, that comes immediately to mind. But does Noam realize that Donald Trump was president during four of those years over the past several decades? Is she calling Donald Trump's management disastrous and incompetent? If so, has Donald Trump heard about what his own Department of Homeland Security secretary is saying about him? I mean, she was saying it in beautiful English, after all. I don't know where she learned that English up in North Dakota, but surely it was beautiful enough that Donald Trump could have understood it. By the way, it should be noted that Republicans in 2023 in Congress spent months fighting against funding for Maui after those horrific fires. Disaster funding. In any event, using the results of that horrific, if limited, report on sexual abuse against a subset of female survivors following the worst wildfire disaster in modern history to claim that FEMA itself should be abolished, well, that is also grotesque, and since I'm sure Noam didn't, as you suggest, does actually bother to read the report that she was citing, and in the words of its author, was misinterpreting, I find that to be grotesquely incompetent. The Trump administration, by the way, has canceled billions of dollars in FEMA grants for local projects meant to protect communities from natural disasters since they returned to power less than 6 months ago, meant to protect communities that Kristi Noem pretended to be so concerned about as a way to justify killing FEMA entirely. Amid all of this tragedy, amid all of this disaster, nonetheless, the White House has been busy praising FEMA's work dealing with the flooding that hammered Texas Hill Country over the weekend, even as they are dealing not only with that, or at least hopefully should be, dealing with other deadly flooding disasters now over just the past week in New Mexico and, yes, North Carolina. But, you know, who knows if they are? Nobody has seen or heard from the person who's supposedly the FEMA director, even as Kristi Noem, the DHS secretary, is out bashing FEMA in the middle of all of these disasters. So, yes, they are fascists. They are autocrats. But they are also incompetent clowns and fools, and we should keep that in mind moving forward, no matter how tyrannical they become or try to become or think they are. We should also remember that we still have the ability to call them clowns and fools, and yes, even over your public airwaves, if only because independent media outlets like this one still exist thanks to your support. Corporate-owned media outlets really can't do that sort of thing, as we have seen with cases like those at ABC and CBS, where they're corporate parent companies who must kowtow to the administration because, you know, it has shown itself willing to use the government apparatus, the FCC and so forth, to go after them. They can't do that sort of thing. The Bradcast and Bradblog.com, well, we do not have corporate parents. We don't have mergers that can be blocked by the administration. We don't own broadcast stations that they can, have their licenses revoked out of spite from this clown. We and other independent media outlets like us, we only have you. And as long as you keep supporting us, and we can continue reporting actual facts, well, the fight against tyranny will continue. And aside from continuing that fight in the independent media on your public airwaves, as long as we are allowed, and on the streets and protests and marches, the best way, of course, to ultimately fight tyranny and fascism and autocracy, that still remains at the ballot box. And Republicans, they know that too, which is why they are fighting so hard to keep you from being able to use that ballot box to remove them from power. Some of those stories are next today, along with the Green News Report later. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is the Bradcast.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
What is known, and the evidence is clear, I'm not alone. There are thousands of us here. This is my democracy. You won't go telling me my vote don't matter.
We're still fighting for it. Victoria, we miss you. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. The fight continues because ultimately democracy remains our only way out of this mess. And Republicans know that. And as usual, because Republicans know that they cannot win on, you know, good ideas, they hope to win on gaming the ballot box. Arguably, of course, they only have a narrow majority right now in the U.S. House to pass that bill that does all that damage that was signed last week by Donald Trump because, well, Republican state Supreme Court justices down in North Carolina reversed rulings against previous rulings against Republican gerrymanders in the state, which allowed the GOP to then pick up three seats in the state's congressional delegation that they probably would not have won in 2024 with fair congressional maps. So that's why they have a majority now. That's why they were able to pass that horrible bill that is going to hurt so many people. So on some related news on GOP efforts to undermine democracy today, you might recall, I think it was back in May, we reported on it at the time, the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals had declared in a case that was filed by Native Americans challenging gerrymandered legislative maps in North Dakota that private groups and individuals no longer have the right to challenge racially discriminatory maps or election-related laws under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Who knew that only the Department of Justice has the right to do that, which also means if the ruling is upheld nationally, that violations of the Voting Rights Act, which are already hard enough to prove after the U.S. Supreme Court gutted Section 5 of the Act, well, violations will pretty much go unchallenged under the VRA entirely, at least when Republican administrations are in power, because if the only people who can challenge it is the DOJ, well, good luck to you when a Donald Trump is running the DOJ out of the White House. And it is precisely because of such concerns that voting rights groups and individual voters have long been able to file their own challenges to violations of the Voting Rights Act for all of the years that it has been in existence since its adoption in 1965. Not only that, but the Supreme Court itself over and over again has confirmed the right of such private challenges by individuals, at least until the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals finally decided that because the law doesn't say that specifically, never mind the hundreds and hundreds of challenges that have played out over the years, but because the law doesn't say that specifically, well, that means that such challenges are unlawful. And specifically in this suit filed by the Turtle Mountain Chippewa Band, the Spirit Lake Nation, and several individual Native American voters in North Dakota, where they have been fighting for fair representation against the legislative map that was adopted by state Republicans in the majority legislature since 2022.
It's just mind-boggling to me, mind-boggling that the Eighth Circuit says, yeah, forget about those decades of precedent that have already come through showing individual voters and groups can bring these lawsuits.
That...
Nope, not anymore.
After the tribes had actually won the case at the lower court. Quote, for decades, tribal nations and Native voters in North Dakota have fought for a fair chance to vote and to have their voices heard. The Eighth Circuit's decision prevents voters in seven states from suing when they are racially discriminated against in violation of the Voting Rights Act, said the Native American Rights Fund staff attorney Lenny Powell on Wednesday. This was in a statement announcing the group's intention to seek a stay from the Eighth Circuit Court's ruling as they appeal now to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Eighth Circuit comprises Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota, where it is now apparently unlawful to challenge violations of the Voting Rights Act unless the Trump DOJ does so themselves. But of course, don't hold your breath for that. Quote, voters in North Dakota throughout the Eighth Circuit and across the U.S. deserve fair maps, said Mark Gaber, the senior director of redistricting at the Campaign Legal Center, which is co-counsel in this case, arguing that every state should have the right to challenge discriminatory maps. Adding, quote, for 60 years, voters have sued to enforce their rights under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Native Americans in North Dakota vindicated their rights at trial and won a fair map after facing a long history of discrimination. That, of course, before the Court of Appeals tossed out that victory, claiming for the first time in history, apparently, that the private challengers had no right to sue at all to enforce the act in the first place. Quote, plaintiffs intend to file a petition for a writ of certiorari before the Supreme Court to resolve this circuit split on a question of exceptional importance. The motion to the Eighth Circuit to stay their ruling for now states, quote, there is a reasonable probability that at least four justices will agree to grant plaintiff's petition at the high court. If the Supreme Court ultimately takes the case and agrees with the Eighth Circuit's ruling, well, that could end voters and private groups' ability to file Section 2 lawsuits nationwide. Right now, it only applies to seven states. Democracy Docket reported on Wednesday that would leave only the U.S. Department of Justice with the power to enforce one of the most important protections in federal civil rights law. The Eighth Circuit is now in direct conflict, the Democracy Docket notes, with the Fifth Circuit, Sixth Circuit, 11th Circuit, as well as every single three-judge district court that has ruled on the issue, according to the motion. Quote, outside of this circuit, the group's motion argues to the Eighth Circuit, every American citizen can rely on an unbroken line of Supreme Court and Circuit Court precedent to enforce the individual rights conferred by Section 2. There is no other circuit in the country which private plaintiffs are unable to enforce their rights under Section 2, the motion argues. Of course, as the corrupted Supreme Court majority has been for years chiseling away at the Voting Rights Act, there is anything but a guarantee at this point that they will agree that the Eighth Circuit overstepped its bounds here. They could decide the Eighth Circuit had it right. Despite their previous, despite the Supreme Court's previous rulings where they didn't mention anything about this. That would virtually all but end the Voting Rights Act in the U.S. if the Supreme Court does this. And certainly as a tool to challenge legislative and congressional maps, which is very much what Republicans are hoping for, as they know that it's becoming harder and harder for them to hang on to power unless they can continue to game those maps through gerrymandering. Which is why Texas Governor Greg Abbott is actually hoping to use the flash flooding tragedy in Hill Country in his state right now to, yes, game congressional maps, which are traditionally only updated, only redistrict every 10 years after each new census, but not in Texas, apparently, where you may recall then U.S. House Majority Leader Texas Rep. Tom DeLay had orchestrated a rare mid-decade redistricting scheme in the state after Republicans had picked up a majority in the state house back in 2002. And he said, oh, great, let's take that chance, that opportunity to rewrite the state maps. So that's how it works in Texas, apparently. That's how they roll. Now, even though Republicans have been in control of the state legislature since then, Governor Abbott is now trying to do the same thing again in hopes of helping Republicans hold on to their thin majority in the U.S. House next year. This via the New York Times today, Governor Greg Abbott of Texas called on state lawmakers to redraw the state's congressional maps when they convene in a special session later this month in a bid to gain Republican seats and help the party keep control of the U.S. House in 2026. Abbott announced the request in a legislative agenda released on Wednesday, when he also called on lawmakers to improve how the state prepares for and responds to floods like the ones that ripped through Texas Hill Country last week and have killed more than 100 people.
But to be clear, Abbott wasn't going to have them consider the flood maps. In fact, right after the floods, he said, maybe we'll consider that. And it was only after some outcry that he said, okay, fine.
You don't mean the flood maps. You mean the legislative maps. They had. He was going to call this session
to do the legislative maps.
And then he threw the flood stuff in there as well.
Yes.
Because of the way that Abbott and the state legislatures there in Texas had reportedly refused requests from local Kerr County officials three times to pay for a siren warning system for flash floods. Well, now they're going to theoretically close the barn door after the horse has already left. Even though, by the way, it would have cost about $1 million had they put up those warning alarms.
Sirens.
Yeah. And it would have helped avoid the devastating tragedy that is still underway there, with more than 100 still missing. because they didn't want to spend the money. Well, we might have to raise the taxes or something. We don't want to do that. The hell with these children who are camping on the banks of the river. Let them die. In the meantime, yeah, Trump's political team have been pushing Texas to redraw their maps, hoping to create new Republican seats in the state. Texas currently has 38 seats in the U.S. House. 25 are held by Republicans, 12 by Democrats. One is vacant in a solidly Democratic district, and Abbott has been pushing off the special election as long as possible there. But they already have a 2-to-1 advantage in their House delegation, Republicans do. But they want to further tweak the maps now to help them stay in power next year. In his call to draw new seats, Abbott's order cited, quote, constitutional concerns that he said had been raised by the Trump Justice Department about the existing lines. In a letter to the governor on July 7, Harmeet Dhillon, the assistant attorney general in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, who is a former Trump campaign lawyer and a Republican activist who defended Trump against the House January 6 committee, she wrote there has been, quote, unconstitutional racial gerrymanders in Texas in four districts. They are unconstitutional not because they prevent minorities from voting for a representative of their choosing as per the Voting Rights Act, but because they do. They do allow minorities to select a representative of their choosing. All four districts are currently held by Democrats in the Dallas and Houston areas. And that's what they want to change. Abbott has called this special session to begin on July 21. Democrats attacked Republicans for focusing on new maps in the middle of this tragedy in Texas. Gina Hinojosa, a Democratic state rep, called it a, quote, blatant partisan power grab that was coming at an unconscionable moment as the search and recovery operations are still continuing. She said, quote, I've been disappointed in this governor before, but I've never been so thoroughly disgusted. The governor is so heartless to do this right now. Representative Hakeem Jeffries of New York, the Democratic leader in the House, scolded Abbott on social media on Wednesday, saying, quote, they should be modernizing emergency response, not rigging maps, he wrote. Democrats, of course, are still frustrated that a Republican remapping in North Carolina just ahead of the 2024 election carved out three new Republican seats, helping the party secure their current majority in the House. They are afraid Texas could do the same in 2026. Abbott's call for redistricting comes as a panel of federal judges in El Paso is currently weighing a constitutional challenge by Black and Hispanic groups to the state's maps that were drawn in 2021 after the census. That case argues that the maps illegally disadvantage their communities. The state's population actually grew substantially from 2010 to 2020. That earned Texas additional House seats. But it was largely because of an increasing number of Hispanic residents, who are now the largest block of residents in the state. The plaintiffs in the case argue that the resulting maps, however, do not reflect those changes, but resulted in additional House seats drawn for white Republicans. Keep in mind, however, if the Supreme Court rules against the Native Americans in the Eighth Circuit case we just discussed, well, challenges by Black and Hispanic voting groups would no longer be allowed at all. So hurry up and decide this thing, Supreme Court. The DOJ under Joe Biden had originally brought a suit over the 2021 maps in Texas, but the department dropped its challenge after Trump took office this year, leaving only private groups and private individual voters to carry on the challenge. A ruling in that case is expected later this year. Instead, the DOJ said in its July 7 letter that the four districts that it identified were, quote, nothing more than vestiges of an unconstitutional, racially based gerrymandering past, and that it must now be corrected by Texas. Abbott and his fellow Texas Republicans, because they hate democracy, are now attempting to do just that. We will, of course, be keeping an eye on that special session in Texas beginning later this month. Lucky for Republicans that all of those kids died on the Guadalupe last Friday, eh? Otherwise, it might have been really embarrassing just to call a special session to disenfranchise their own voters. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. All right, welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Got to get straight to it. Our latest Green News Report.
Emergency crews conducting dozens of swift water rescues, but they could not save everyone.
Yet another deadly flash flooding event, the third state in 5 days, this time in New Mexico. Extreme heat kills thousands in Western Europe. Plus,
there is the danger that we exceed our adaptive capacity.
Climate experts warn no country is prepared for climate impacts.
All of those warnings and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
When you look at the floods, the wildfires, the droughts, the heat waves, are we now reaping the whirlwind of man-made climate change?
Yes, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's been less than a week, and we've got the third deadly flash flooding event. Amazing and heartbreaking, frankly.
Yes, this is true. In central Texas, as we go to air, the death toll from catastrophic weekend storms continues to rise, now at least 120, with more than 160 still missing. County officials issued boil water notices for affected areas because the contaminated floodwaters infiltrated drinking water supplies. Scientists warn the health impacts of flooding can extend for months, including leaving behind toxic mold.
Gosh, I wonder how much this is going to cost them at this point down in Texas, when it would have only cost about $1 million to put up siren warning systems on the Guadalupe.
On Sunday, North Carolina was hit by record flooding that killed at least six. Now, search and rescue is also underway in Ruidoso, New Mexico, where on Tuesday, heavy monsoon rains triggered record flash flooding and mudslides in areas burned by devastating wildfires last year. The floods swept away homes and killed at least three people, including two children. On the same day, a small but intense storm in Chicago dumped more than 5 inches of rain in just 90 minutes in some areas, overwhelming flood control infrastructure, but thankfully no reports of serious injuries there. So that's four states in 5 days struck by climate-intensified extreme rains and flash floods, just days after congressional Republicans passed and Donald Trump signed a massive tax cut bill repealing landmark federal investments to combat climate change and build infrastructure resilience. Of course, numerous studies show that as the world warms, due to man-made climate change, extreme rain is becoming even more extreme. That's because a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. In Texas, the heaviest storms are now dropping about 20% more rain than they did in the 1950s. Mm. The National Climate Assessment has also concluded that floods are getting more dangerous and costly, calculating that over the last 30 years, about one-third of the damage caused by inland flooding would not have happened without human-caused climate change.
That's the National Climate Assessment, I assume,
issued by the previous administration.
Yes, and by the way, last week the Trump administration shut down the website hosting those congressionally mandated national climate assessments. The USDA and other federal agencies also removed climate change data from their websites that the public paid for.
Well, if you can't read it, it hasn't happened, I guess.
Relatedly, an internal Trump administration memo obtained by Bloomberg News reveals plans for, quote, abolishing FEMA. The plans include halting enrollments in the National Flood Insurance Program and providing smaller amounts of aid for fewer incidents, moves that by design would dramatically limit federal assistance for victims of disaster. Extreme weather is also striking elsewhere. A deadly, persistent extreme heat wave killed 2,300 people across 12 European countries in recent weeks.
Wow.
In France, the heat intensified a massive wind-driven wildfire outside of Marseille. Extreme drought and heat also exacerbated fires in Spain, Greece, Serbia, and Syria. Western Europe just saw its hottest June on record. More extreme rainstorms and floods, heat waves, droughts, and wildfires should be a wake-up call for governments around the world. That's according to Julia King, chair of the UK's Climate Adaptation Committee on the BBC. She says our homes, roads, bridges, and vital infrastructure were designed for conditions of the past.
The message has to be absolutely that we both need to maintain the pressure on reducing emissions globally, but also we need to be doing more to adapt, recognizing that we live in this world with a very different climate.
Yeah, we do, but of course we won't, at least not here in the U.S., at least not for the next, oh, I don't know, 3.5 years, I'm afraid. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Morning sign, I hear it, but I pay no mind. Hear my voice, it's saying something. Thank you very much, Desiree.
Yep.
Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, or want to give it another listen or share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do so anytime for free at bradblog.com. That's made possible by those of you who hit a donate button once you're there, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us remain on your public airwaves. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. Morning.